It's Marketplace Tech for September 16th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today, the Senate Judiciary Committee has a hearing scheduled on proposed reforms to the 30-year-old Electronic Communications Privacy Act. The hearing comes at a moment of strained relations between the U.S. and China. China's president is scheduled to visit the White House next week. The U.S. is considering sanctions against the country over hacking attacks, and the government had to drop spying charges it made against chair of Temple University's physics department, Ji Xiaoxing. New York Times reporter Matt Apuzzo reported on that story. Matt, thanks for talking.
Hey, good to be here.
What is it that the prosecutors and the FBI thought they had on Professor Ji?
Well, they thought they had this really incriminating email in which Professor Ji sends schematics of laboratory equipment to researchers in China. And prosecutors thought that this schematics was for something called a pocket heater, which is used in thin films, which are used in superconductor research. Professor Ji was not supposed to disclose details of this pocket heater. He had signed a non-disclosure agreement, and prosecutors were like, aha, you are giving up American trade secrets to China, and they arrested him on fraud charges back in May.
Now, of course, they got it wrong, and he was actually taking part in the kind of collaboration that I guess a lot of academics take part in. They talk to other folks who are working in that field of study.
Right. And the real linchpin came when Professor Ji's lawyers took the schematics in question and showed them to other leading physicists who said, that's not a pocket heater. I'm an expert in thin film stuff, or in one case,
sure,
I invented the pocket heater, and that's not a pocket heater, right? Like, I know
from pocket heaters.
Right, I know from pocket heaters, and you're no pocket heater. And then, like, 2 weeks later, the government filed a motion to drop the case.
What does this tell us about the complexity of technology that's being worked on now, and also just the moment that we're in between the U.S. and China with all of this, you know, fear about general IP theft?
Right. So we should give the Justice Department and the FBI its due. I mean, the United States is, by all accounts, under siege, and the FBI is sort of at the tip of the spear on this and trying to crack down on corporate espionage. But as you said, this stuff is really complicated. Some of the stuff that has been alleged to have been stolen by Chinese insiders, I mean, you know, special pigments, including the thing that makes Oreo cookie cream so white. A lot of this stuff is really obscure. And if you're a prosecutor, an FBI agent, knowing what that looks like and knowing the science behind that isn't necessarily easy.
Matt Apuzzo is a reporter for The New York Times, and he's been covering this story. Matt, thank you for breaking it down for us.
Always great to be with you.
Snapchat announced a bunch of new features for its app this week. Some are fun. One of them is interesting. Snapchat is known for delivering messages that disappear immediately, but now it's going to let users pay to replay snaps on a regular basis. Why does the company want to do in-app purchases? Here's Ian Scher at CNET.
It offers a new line of revenue if this is successful. Snapchat's been trying to do a lot of advertising in the last year, and they've set agreements with all sorts of advertisers and also with media partnerships. And now they're actually asking their users for money.
Maybe this is Snapchat's take on what a premium paid version of its service can be. Get your wallet and your smartphone out. Twitter will now allow people to contribute to political campaigns via tweet. We wanted to learn more about whether this could be a game changer and who would benefit. So we called up Bert Johnson, political science professor at Middlebury College. I asked Bert about which candidates this new feature might work well for.
The campaigns that will impact the most is campaigns that do very well with small contributors. Because as you can probably guess, if you're going to contribute $100,000 to a super PAC, you're probably not going to contribute on Twitter.
So we're talking Bernie Sanders, Rand Paul, other sort of more internet famous, perhaps, candidates.
That's right. Bernie Sanders does well, Ben Carson, Rand Paul, people like that.
This does seem a little bit strange that you can actually see who your friends have given money to. Might it have, I don't know, a galvanizing effect in that way?
Well, peer pressure definitely works in any kind of participation activity, whether it be playing sports or going to church or fundraising. So certainly if people see that their friends are donating, they're more likely to donate as well. And what campaigns may wind up doing is trying to encourage people to tweet their friends and ask them to donate.
So how much could this kind of functionality actually, move the needle for political candidates on Twitter?
I think it certainly could, especially during events like tonight's Republican debate that generates a lot of chatter on Twitter, as we all know. Friends will be tweeting friends, people will be tweeting all of their followers, and certainly it will help those campaigns to be able to tap into events like that.
Bert Johnson teaches political science at Middlebury College. He's also the chair of the poli-sci department there. Bert, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right, from Twitter to Facebook, it's been requested oh so many times, and now Facebook finally is preparing to test this feature. Yep, a dislike button. Zuckerberg announced it yesterday. It's been hinted at before. It's a potential minefield for brands. But discourse on Facebook was just begging to be simplified, wasn't it? The like button, as of 2013, was on over 7.5 million websites. Get on Facebook and like us if you dare. Facebook.com/MarketplaceTech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.